This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. America went to the polls a week ago today. 7 days later, all major networks and the AP have called the race for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Donald Trump is not conceding, and the administration is blocking the start of the transition process. Here's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the floor of the Senate yesterday.
Our institutions are actually built for this. We have the system in place to consider concerns. And President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
And here's Minority Leader Senator Chuck Schumer.
Make no mistake, there has been no evidence of any significant widespread voter fraud. Joe Biden won this election fair and square. The margins of his victory are growing by the day.
Now, the ongoing dispute, coupled with an unsettled balance of power in the U.S. Senate and Democratic losses in the House, paint a challenging picture for the country and for the Massachusetts congressional delegation. For more, we welcome WBUR's Callum Borchers. Callum, welcome back.
Good to be back, Tiziana. Although, has it really been only a week? Oh, my goodness.
It's been a year of a week, Callum. No question.
It certainly has.
So I'm going to start by asking you, is Joe Biden the president-elect when the results aren't final and thus not official? And this is not a political question. This is kind of a procedural question, Callum.
Sure. I feel like a high school civics teacher, but let's talk about the process since we're asking. So, you know, Massachusetts right here, which was a blowout, right? Biden won by 30 plus points, but we're still accepting overseas ballots until Friday. Also, keep in mind that there's a routine audit going on of 3%, I should say, of all of the precincts. And the municipal clerks here in this state aren't going to certify their results to the Secretary of State until next Wednesday. So even technically, Massachusetts isn't over in the strictest sense. More broadly, the Electoral College doesn't vote until December 14th, and Congress won't count and certify that result until January 6th. So, I mean, strictly speaking, that's when Biden will officially be president-elect. But, I mean, for all practical purposes, he is the president-elect today.
And sticking with practical purposes, isn't it typical for the transition to begin as soon as the election is called, whether that's on Election Day or after Election Day? You know, compare this to past elections.
Well, that's right. It is typical. And so usually the General Services Administration provides money and office space for a transition team as soon as the election is called. As you noted at the top, the GSA is refusing to do that for now. Something like this did happen in 2000, of course, when we had that very tight recount going on in Florida, and the GSA didn't release funds until Gore conceded in mid-December of that year. That was shortly before the Electoral College actually held their vote. President Clinton at the time had actually suggested funding two transition teams at once, which didn't happen, but I think it suggests how important this transition phase is. I mean, keep in mind, too, that Joe Biden has been receiving classified intelligence briefings since September. It's customary for the major party nominees to get those briefings even before somebody is elected, because it is so important to have this smooth transition of power. And even more recently, you know, President Trump was making his cabinet selections before the Electoral College voted in 2016. So it's not as if what's going on right now is historically premature.
Okay, so as Mitch McConnell said, the Trump campaign is within its rights to bring legal challenges. But even the president's own lawyers seem to be saying these are really long shots. The New York Times is reporting that attorneys at Jones Day, which is a firm representing the president in these suits, are concerned that they're participating in legal maneuvers that actually lack evidence and could undermine the integrity of the election. So is this a legal strategy or a political strategy? What's going on here?
Some of both. I mean, the legal strategy focuses on trying to disqualify ballots that have arrived after Election Day. And Pennsylvania is probably the biggest battleground because they had this 3-day grace period, right, for ballots that were postmarked by Election Day but didn't arrive until 3 days afterward. Now, in the meantime, the Supreme Court has ordered Pennsylvania to keep these late arriving ballots separate just in case the grace period is overturned. Now, that's probably unlikely. And it's also worth remembering that Biden leads by about 48,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Compare that to just several hundred during the Florida recount in 2000. So it's unlikely that Pennsylvania could change. And also, even if Pennsylvania were to change, it wouldn't change the overall outcome of the presidential race. So as you suggested, there's a political component to this too. And it could be about, from a Republican perspective, building a case for additional election security laws. And Democrats, of course, would probably view those efforts as an attempt at voter suppression.
Okay, so let's come home to Massachusetts. There are a lot of Democratic players in the Bay State who might be waiting in the wings to join a Biden-Harris administration when things are finalized. Former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, he was just named head of Biden's coronavirus task force. You've got Secretary John Kerry, Congressman Joe Kennedy, maybe even Senator Elizabeth Warren. Are you hearing more about the role that Massachusetts leaders and elected former elected officials might play in forming a Biden administration?
Well, as the Boston mayor, Marty Walsh, said over the weekend, he can't take everyone from Massachusetts. So that is an impressive roster you just ticked off. Marty Walsh himself, by the way, has notably not said that he is seeking a third term officially, as he's facing challenges from Michelle Wu and Andrea Campbell. So it's possible that Marty Walsh could even be in the running for some type of position. John Kerry, you mentioned he campaigned hard for Joe Biden. He could be a candidate for either his old job or some other one. He was confirmed by the Senate in a 94-3 vote in 2013, so he might be somebody who could actually get through relatively easily. Joe Kennedy does make some sense because he's not going back to Congress and he's kind of a free agent when his term is up. Warren's appointment would be a little bit more complicated, though.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What is the thought? I mean, with there being a Republican governor who would be in a position to appoint, at least in the short term, her replacement to the Senate.
Well, I think the uncertainty in Georgia could hurt her chances. So keep in mind, we've got these probably two Senate runoffs on January 5th in Georgia. And so we won't know who controls the Senate until then. And Biden may want to make his cabinet picks earlier than that. So let's just suppose in the Democrats' dream scenario, they pull off upsets in Georgia and win both of those seats. So that would make the Senate 50-50 if we count independents who caucus with the Democrats. So then the Vice President Kamala Harris would cast tie-breaking votes. They would effectively control the Senate. But imagine in that scenario if they then appointed Elizabeth Warren to a cabinet post and allowed Charlie Baker to fill her seat with a Republican who would temporarily hand control back to the GOP after they had fought so hard to control the Senate. That would be temporary until a special election, of course, but I'm sure the Democrats would be loath to do that.
Okay, so last question for you, Callum. The Commonwealth returned its entire delegation except newly elected Jake Auchincloss from the 4th. Everyone's a Democrat. Yesterday, Congresswoman Catherine Clark told us here on the show that the Democratic agenda in Washington not going to change much in the new year, but good chance that the Democrats have a slimmer lead in the House and will not be in control of the Senate. So what does that mean for the agenda that leaders here in Massachusetts envision?
Well, it's a good question. And I thought it was interesting over the weekend in Joe Biden's address to the nation that when he talked about a mandate, of course, candidates often talk about they've won a mandate in election. He said that the mandate is for the parties to cooperate with each other, which I thought was interesting. As Catherine Clark said, the Democrats' legislative goals may remain largely the same. I do think the agenda, though, could change in the sense that the House will probably do less oversight and investigation of a Biden administration than they did of the Trump administration. Now, we heard them say many times in recent years, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, right? Like we can still legislate and investigate, but there is a finite amount of time in the day. And so with less investigation, they may have more time to push that legislative agenda forward.
All right. That is WBUR's Callum Borchers. Cal, thanks.
Glad to be with you.